Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Ultrasound Gel Podcast, gathering evidence from the literature. I'm Mike Pratz, and with me today, Dr. Cray Bolger and Dr. Jacob Avila.
Hello.
Good morning. It sounded kind of Australian there.
Hello.
Or British.
Or British. I'm not good at accents.
You have to work on your accent. Okay. Well, today we're going to be talking about an important paper. This paper is titled A Modified Lung and Cardiac Ultrasound Protocol Saves Time and Rules in the Diagnosis of Acute Heart Failure. Another paper that says its conclusion in the title. I like that. Craig, tell us about it.
So I am super excited about this because this is one of my favorite ultrasounds probably to do, especially on arrival to the ED. So dyspnea is an extremely common chief complaint in the emergency department with a pretty broad differential. And heart failure is a pretty frequent cause for it, but there's often a lot of comorbidities and complicating factors that maybe make the physical exam and diagnosis a bit challenging. We know that history, physical, blood test, chest x-ray don't perform that well, actually, for heart failure. And so we're hoping that ultrasound's kind of the knight in shining armor with this diagnosis. So a lot of people think, oh, ultrasound takes too long. You have to have a lot of skill to do it. But this study tries to find a simplified approach to make the diagnosis of heart failure pretty quickly and differentiate the undifferentiated dyspneic patient.
Well put. So essentially, they are taking something we already know about, that ultrasound can be used to make this diagnosis, and now seeing how easy can we make it, how few views can we get that will help us make this diagnosis. So how did they do this study, Jacob?
So this study was kind of a post hoc analysis of a study in 2015 that was entitled Diagnosing Acute Heart Failure in Patients with Undifferentiated Dyspnea, the Lucas Protocol. And in that original study, they had 99 patients, and they looked at a bunch of things. I mean, their scans in the original study kind of took a long time. I think it was like 13 minutes or something like that. And they looked at four zones in each lung, and then they looked at the IVC, and then they looked at the heart to look for any cardiac dysfunction. And they put all of those things together to develop this kind of protocol and to look for sensitivity and specificities of each. Now, I did mention that they, you know, took kind of 13 minutes to 13 minutes, right, Mike? 13
minutes. 12 plus or minus 4.
12. Whatever. 12 plus or minus 4 is what I meant to say. So they took up to 16 minutes, you know, if you want to go with their standard deviation there. They took a while to do these scans, and I guess one of the things we were talking about off air is that that's still probably getting to the diagnosis faster than standard, but it still takes a little bit of time. So they decided to do a subgroup analysis and look at what they looked at is they looked at just a couple things. They only wanted to look at if the ejection fraction was less than 45% and if they had B-lines only in the superior anterior zones. And they use a standard Volpicelli four zones in the original study, but in this one, just, you know, in the anterior fields, do they have B lines? It was performed, this is the original study, by 2,001 attendings. About 36 out of 99 of those had heart failure, you know, in the original study. Now, the exam was a lot faster than their 12 plus or minus four. It took an average of 1 minute, 32 seconds to complete. And that's a lot better than the 12 minutes that they had before, and they had pretty good numbers. I would have liked there to be better sensitivity. Is a sensitivity of 25%, is that good? Or I don't know stats. I feel like a sensitivity of 25% isn't that good, but their specificity was 100% with a positive likelihood ratio of, what was their positive likelihood ratio, Mike and Cray?
Cannot calculate.
I interpret that as infinity.
It is.
Is that right? Infinity.
It's too freaking awesome. That's what it means.
When you have a specificity of 100%, I mean, theoretically, every time you see that finding, it's going to be right.
Right.
So, infinity.
To infinity and beyond. That's all I can
say. It's pretty good.
It's way good.
It's decent.
So, what do you guys think about this study?
Well, I think that it's promising that's pretty good positive likelihood ratio, like you said. So when you do this test, especially if it's really fast and you find that they have all three of these findings, bilateral B lines and a low ejection fraction, then you can pretty much start treating them like heart failure, I would say, if it's the right clinical context.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite things to do is when the medics bring someone in on NEBS that, to me, just looks wet. I pop the probe on real quick before the medics even leave and show them the B-lines, switch them from their albuterol to their BiPAP and nitro, and before the medics are out the door, we're often seeing improvement in symptoms. And so anecdotally speaking, I think this limited protocol is good for maybe your initial assessment and treatment, and then you do the comprehensive protocol as you kind of progress down the algorithm. But if you have bilateral B-lines in a dyspneic patient, I think getting started early on your heart failure treatment plan is good, and then remembering that other things can trigger heart failure exacerbations, so that may be where you do your more expansive protocol.
One thing that I'm bummed out about with this study and the original study is that the negative likelihood ratios weren't like the less than 0.1 that we need, and the sensitivity wasn't super good, and I'm not 100% sure exactly why that is, because some of the other B-line studies show really good negative likelihood ratios. Like, you can basically rule out heart failure, you know, with a negative lung scan. I'm not sure why they weren't able to show that here.
I'm wondering if it's just the two views, that it could still be something like a viral pneumonia, or
sure,
that if you go all fields and also get in the decreased cardiac function, which I'm not calculating EFs on a daily basis, but I just do the eyeball cardiac function.
So I think what happened here was that a classic example of what happens when you raise the test threshold. So in raising that cutoff by making it so that they had to be positive in only these two areas of the chest and have the cardiac activity also, they really increase the specificity, but because that cutoff is higher, you're gonna decrease the sensitivity, which means that when you see it, it's gonna indicate that there is heart failure as the cause, but when you don't see it, you can't rule it out. So you can compare it to the original study. They had a sensitivity of 83, which is much better than 25 in this study, but the specificity was 83, and that's less than the specificity they had here. So I think that kind of makes sense with how they modified the protocol, and it explains these results a little bit.
It'd be interesting to see a follow-up study looking at which lung fields, if we can limit it down to two, are the best for diagnosing heart failure, which get you the higher specificity.
We should address some of the limitations of this study. The big one that we always worry about, this was a secondary analysis. So this was after they already performed the initial study. Now they went back and kind of mined through the data, did some more analysis to see what they could pull out. And that's always a little bit risky because there's some inherent biases when you're doing this data mining, that maybe you're going to find whatever you want to look for.
I think something we discussed prior to coming on too is that the time in this may be questionable because it wasn't the actual full time of acquisition. It was time stamping on the images, as Jacob had mentioned earlier. And so that means you've already got your ideal windows. And so you're not necessarily, you're timing time of acquisition, not time to get to that window.
Yeah. Right, because in the initial study, they had done all of the additional scans. And this one, they kind of looked at only this modified protocol, looked at the timestamps. So who knows in prospective time if how long it would have taken and if it would have been as dramatic a time savings. One thing they put forward in this is a protocol that to me makes a lot of sense. So we know that this is a very specific modified protocol. So you do this modified protocol first. If it's positive, then you can try to say, this looks like heart failure, start treating it. If it's negative, then maybe expand your protocol a little bit, do more lung fields, do some diastology, and that could help you increase your sensitivity theoretically.
I think too, you have to keep in mind that this was also ultrasound super users. So this isn't your run of the mill, I do lung ultrasound sometimes. This is a person who's fairly comfortable with acquisition interpretation of both cardiac and thoracic ultrasound.
So let me summarize this study. This was a secondary analysis of a previous study that prospectively enrolled patients with undifferentiated dyspnea. They ended up having a total of 99 patients, and with their modified protocol, they had a positive likelihood ratio of infinity, thanks to their specificity of 100%, and a negative likelihood ratio of 0.75. The total time they calculated this to take was about 1.5 minutes, but it's a little bit unclear if that would hold true if you were doing this prospectively. So my take-home points from this study is that if you have B-lines and a decreased ejection fraction on ultrasound, that's pretty specific for heart failure. But don't use this modified protocol to try to rule out heart failure. And I think that this also puts forth the idea that there's a lot of potential to save time doing this type of ultrasound. All right, well, thanks again for joining us. Thanks to the authors for performing this study. If you want to listen to more, you can visit our website at ultrasoundgel.org, visit us on Facebook or Google Plus, and give us a nice review in iTunes or anywhere else you rate podcasts.
The bathroom wall.
Thanks for listening. Talk to you later.
More pressure, more gel, more pressure, more gel,
more ultrasound gel podcast.
No, no, that's fine. Listen, listen. The TB needs to come out.
I know.
You just
it probably is. I haven't had it. I somehow missed the TB test.
I'm concerned because I'm in an enclosed room with Cray. It's quite small, and I don't have an N95 on.
Just a little bit of blood. It's okay.